Keep your eye on the ball and hit them where they ain't. I'm Nina Instead, and this is Dead Ball. Wee Willie Keeler was one of the smallest players in Major League Baseball, standing 5'4" and weighing about 140 pounds. His stature didn't prevent him from hitting the ball. Willie had one of the biggest bats in the game, both figuratively and literally, weighing up to 46 ounces. His motto was, "Keep your eye on the ball and hit 'em where they ain't." It worked for the third baseman turned outfielder. He made a career of it. Willie Keeler played 13 straight seasons where he batted over 300, an achievement he reached in 16 of the 19 years that he played. He had a lifetime average of 345, and for seven straight seasons, he had an on-base percentage above 400. In 1894, he batted 371, scoring 165 runs and notching 94 RBIs. He also hit 22 triples in his first year with the Orioles. This was the same season in which he began his streak of 8 consecutive years with 200 or more hits, a record that held for more than 100 years, but has since been matched and beaten by only Ichiro Suzuki. Wee Willie Keeler was the leadoff man for 9 seasons in Baltimore and Brooklyn, winning 5 pennants over that span and seeing his team take second place 3 times. During those years, he averaged 215 hits and 134 runs per season. He hit 378 during his time between the two ball clubs. His best season? That was 1897, when he batted 424, which is the highest average for a left-handed hitter in baseball history. He led the American League with 243 hits in 128 games. In fact, Keeler started the season with a 44-game hitting streak, beating the previous record of 42. His record stood for 44 years. It would be broken by a name you might recognize, Joe DiMaggio. During the 1898 season, Keeler hit a remarkable number of singles, 206, and this record stood for more than a century until it was broken by Suzuki. Keeler was known to have handled the bat well, placing hits where he wanted and dropping perfect bunts on a whim. He was also smart on the base paths and had some speed to go with it. Of his 33 career long balls, 30 of them were inside the park home runs. When he retired in 1910, Keeler was second only to Chicago player Cap Anson for the lead in all-time hits with 2,932. William Henry O'Kelleher Jr. was born March 3, 1872, in Brooklyn, New York. His father was William O'Kelleher Sr., and he grew up in County Cork, Ireland. At the age of 26, he relocated to Brooklyn and married another recent Irish immigrant, Mary Kiley. Due to widespread discrimination against the Irish at that time, the family changed their last name to Kelleher, a name Willie would further shorten to Keeler. Willie's father, who went by Pat, worked as a trolley switchman on the DeKalb Avenue line. The Kellehers bought a home in Brooklyn's Bedford neighborhood, and Mary gave birth to 2 sons, Tom and Joe, prior to the arrival of William, known as Willie. Mary would go on to have 2 more children, but only their 3 oldest boys survived to adulthood. As a child, Willie played early versions of baseball. He served as captain for his public school team, and at the age of 14, began to play for the Rivals, a local amateur team. He quit school at 15 to play baseball for a factory team, even though he didn't work at the factory. His father soon found him a job at a different factory, a place that made cheese, and Willie worked there for a week. He earned $2, for the week, left early on Saturday and earned $3 playing in a ball game on Staten Island. He never again returned to the factory or held a job outside of baseball. At 16, he traveled by streetcar and ferry to play for semi-pro teams in the New York area. At first, he earned $1.50 a game, but as his skills developed and he gained a reputation of being a good player, he started playing for higher-level leagues and earning more money. Wee Willie Keeler finally broke into organized baseball in 1892 at the age of 20 when he signed with Binghamton, an Eastern League team. And Binghamton, they're still around. They are a AA affiliate of the New York Mets. As a rookie, Keeler hit an impressive 373, but he was a terrible fielder, with 48 errors and just 93 games at third base. Keeler did manage to get called up to play for the Giants in September and singled in his first at-bat off smiling Tim Keefe. In 14 games as a rookie, Willie had a .321 batting average. He made a lasting impression, and the Giants put him on their active roster for 1893. But on May 10th, he injured his leg, causing him to miss 2 months of baseball. And then he found himself back in Binghamton. There, his defensive struggles got the best of him. He made 11 errors in 2 weeks. The Giants sent him to the Brooklyn Grooms, where he batted .312. Later, the Orioles traded for Keeler and fellow Hall of Famer Dan Brothers. All the Grooms got in return were players Bill Schindel and George Treadway. This was one of the most lopsided trades in baseball history. Schindel would go on to hold the record for most errors in a season, and Treadway played less than 5 years in the big leagues before he retired. Adding Brothers and Wee Willie Keeler to the roster created a great lineup, particularly as they were joining fellow Irishman John McGraw and Huey Jennings. This team would dominate baseball for years to come. While all four players were born to Irish-born parents, Brothers towered over the others, standing 6'2". The Orioles of the 1890s were legendary. Keeler and the rest of their teammates, most of them first-generation Irish-Americans, became the best of friends both on and off the field. They'd play hard together all day and drink hard together all night. This was a rowdy bunch. On the field, the Orioles were innovative, and many things we take for granted today, like the hit-and-run play, were either invented or became popular because of the Orioles in the 1890s. And the team did what it took to win, from blocking base runners to bunting repeatedly, which annoyed pitchers. They hit extra balls in the outfield, which they snuck into play when a hit got past them. Funny to think about it now, but decidedly unfair to their opponents. They would writhe on the ground and pinch themselves to fake being hit by a ball. Baltimore worked the hit and run a dozen times a game in an era when most players swung from the heels. Baltimore's tactics ranged from the sophomoric to the sublime. Players yelled, "I got it, I got it," on pop-ups hit by teammates and interfered with foul flies that drifted near their bench. Runners would scoot from first base to third base when the lone umpire's back was turned. As the team's third baseman, John McGraw would hold on to a runner's belt if he was trying to advance home on a sacrifice fly. To get around this, one base runner undid his belt so that when he ran home after the catch, McGraw was left standing at third base holding the belt, while the runner hurried toward home plate, keeping his pants up by the belt loops. Nothing was overlooked, and the groundskeepers maintained the field to favor the home team. The Orioles, they shaved their wooden bats flat on one side for better bunting, until league officials caught on and banned the renegade bats. The Orioles were among the first to look at the psychological aspects of the game, although at the time, they didn't think of it that way. Before games, they would sit on a bench outside the visitors' dressing room, filing their spikes and glaring at opponents as they emerged. They wanted to cause fear in the opposing team. The Orioles were known to deliberately crush catchers' feet as they came across home plate, and Orioles catchers threw their masks into the path of runners racing home, hoping to slow their pace. According to a story in the Baltimore Sun, the fastest Orioles, including Willie, placed stakes in the bottom of their shoes to ward off blisters. Orioles catchers would drop pebbles into the shoes of unsuspecting batters to slow them down. In the 1890s, baseball players were not known for their kindness, eloquence, or manners. They were known for drinking, rough language, and fighting. baseball was a tough game, and the Orioles were a tough group. Scrapping was hardly a Baltimore phenomenon. Players and umpires routinely slugged it out, and more than one umpire stormed off the field mid-game, leaving the clubs to manage themselves. Baseball fans, or cranks as they were known back in the day, they got into the spirit of the thing and could be quite rowdy. The public, they took their cues from the players. During big games, overflow crowds spilled onto the playing fields and badgered the opposition. In Pittsburgh, the Orioles might be pelted with bits of iron ore. In Cleveland, they dodge potatoes thrown by unruly fans. Fighting among teammates was not unheard of. Once Willie and his friend John McGraw, they got into a brawl after McGraw mocked Willie for poor fielding. The fight, which started in the team shower, continued in the clubhouse with the two ballplayers, naked and damp from the shower, exchanging punches. Despite their argument coming to blows, the two were lifelong friends. McGraw would help Willie years later when he was down on his luck. Despite drama on and off the field, the Orioles played beautifully at home, winning nearly three-quarters of their games. It didn't hurt that they had more than a handful of tricks to draw on when fielding. The third baseline slanted inward, preserving Baltimore's bunts. The first baseline, it sloped downhill, promoting their speed. Even the mound might be booby-trapped. Sometimes they sprinkled it with soap flakes, which stuck to the hands of rival pitchers and played havoc with their control. At season's end, the victorious Orioles quietly passed the plate and collected $150 for their groundskeeper, an Irish immigrant and fellow drinking buddy named Tom Murphy. The money was payment for all the assistance he provided the team that year. Starting in 1894, the Orioles won three pennants in a row. Baltimore took nearly 7 of every 10 games in 96, the best winning percentage in Orioles Major League history. Wee Willie Keeler, he played a major role in the team's success. He offered up strong and consistent play for 5 years, with 200 hits each season, including 239 hits in 1897. Willie was known for having incredible bat control, and he could foul off pitches on a whim. It was said that Willie perfected the art of bunting, and the Orioles would become known for employing the sacrifice bunt to perfection. In Baltimore, Keeler basically invented a technique called the Baltimore chop, where he hit the ball with a chopping motion, sending it into the ground where it bounced high into the air, making it difficult for a fielder to throw the runner out. As for the Orioles, what the team did, they did it together, whether it was playing baseball or drinking at a saloon. They ate, drank, and partied, both at home and on the road. They rode around town in flashy bicycle suits with gold stockings. They talked shop while sweating it out in Turkish baths. John McGraw later said, "If it was a trip to the theater, we went and sat together. We talked, we lived, we dreamed baseball." The players were more than teammates. They were a family, and many lived in the boarding houses near the ballpark. They looked out for one another. But in baseball, like in life, all good things must come to an end. As the 20th century approached, the sport of baseball, and in particular one of its most colorful teams, the Orioles, things were changing. In 1899, Orioles manager Ned Hanlon and owner Harry Vanderhorst wanted to combine two teams, the Baltimore Orioles and the Brooklyn Superbas. The Baltimore dynasty would be dismantled. Willie decided that he would return to New York, his home state, and play for Brooklyn. He made an impact on the new team right away. In 1899, he had 61 RBI and hit .379, leading the team to a pennant in their first year of existence. After 3 more great seasons for Keeler and Brooklyn, he was acquired by the New York Highlanders. Wee Willie Keeler would become the first $10,000 player. In his first year, he hit .312 with 160 hits, 24 steals, and he played in 132 games. The next year, he hit .343 with 186 hits and 8 triples. In 1905, Wee Willie wasn't playing like he once did. He hit 304, but Knapp LaJoie overtook him as the best hitter as far as lifetime average goes. In 1907, 08, and 1910, he was only a shadow of his former glory. Keeler never hit above 265, and he missed the 1909 season because of injury. Keeler retired from baseball in 1910 after playing one more season in the major leagues with the New York Giants, with his old friend John Muggsy McGraw. In 1911, Willie played for Toronto of the International League, getting 43 more hits. He sat out 1912 and 1913, and in 1914, he took a manager position with the Brooklyn Tip-Tops. In 1915, he worked as a scout for the Braves. After retiring from the sport, he invested his money in real estate and purchased commercial lots all over New York City. Willie's story, unfortunately, is one of rags to riches to rags. Willie was known as the Brooklyn Millionaire when he finally retired in 1915, although my best guess has his actual net worth being around $150,000 to $200,000. But converted to today's money, that's about $5 million. That's pretty good. Willie had invested his baseball earnings in mining stocks and a number of successful business ventures, including some with his teammates, as well as real estate. When he retired, he bought a gas station in Brooklyn. But Willie's health did not hold out. He contracted tuberculosis. His lifelong allergies worsened, the gas station failed, and when the real estate market lost its speculative value after World War I, Keeler found himself broke, and he and his brothers were forced to sell their childhood home. By the early 1920s, Willie was in very poor health. He suffered from heart disease and endured chest pains and difficulty breathing. He attended a Major League Baseball game for the final time when he visited the Polo Grounds for Game 6 of the 1921 World Series between the Yankees and the Giants. At the game, Willie was able to spend time with his old friend and teammate, John McGraw. 2 months later, Brooklyn owner Charles Ebbets presented Willie with a check for $5,500 after owners in the two leagues each contributed to a fund that would help him pay off his debts. Now in chronic ill health, by late 1922, Willie knew he didn't have much time left, but he vowed he would live to see 1923. On New Year's Eve, 1922, he was visited by some friends who wanted to cheer him up. When Willie became visibly exhausted by the visit, they left. This meant Willie was home alone with his brother to ring in the new year. At midnight, Willie heard the bells and sirens in the streets as the new year dawned. Willie sat up and said to his brother, "You see, the new year is here, and so am I." He then enjoyed a drink and a cigarette, and then said that he was tired and ready for a long sleep. Just hours later, he was dead. Wee Willie Keeler was 50 years old. His cause of death was chronic endocarditis, an inflammation of the lining of the heart, a condition Keeler had probably suffered from for several years. Willie also had edema, swelling of the tissues because of an excess accumulation of watery fluid, another symptom of heart trouble. Though Willie was a lifelong bachelor who lived alone most of his adult life, he spent the final years of his life as a boarder in a house on Gate Street in New York. The home was owned by a woman named Clara Moss. Willie and Clara became close, and romance blossomed between the two during the final years of Willie's life. Willie told his friends, "It took my whole life, but I finally found love." Willie declined to marry Clara. He knew that he was not in good health, and he didn't want to marry her just to make a widow of her. When he died, he left Clara his entire estate of $3,500. After paying for the funeral and some of Willie's bills, there was not much money left over. Willie Keeler may have died broke, but he had a wealth of friends, and his funeral was attended by many old teammates, as well as some of baseball's greatest players and managers. Many of them wept openly. John McGraw went into such hysterics after losing Keeler that he had to leave the service. It was indeed an end to an era. Wee Willie Keeler wanted to be buried near his mother's grave at Brooklyn's Calvary Cemetery, and his brother fulfilled his request. The Dead Ball Podcast is created by Tim Scott. This week's episode was written by Tim Scott. Chuck Walters is our technical consultant and audio editor. If you're enjoying the podcast, please take a moment to leave a rating or a review on your favorite podcatcher. This helps other baseball lovers find the show and the stories shared here. To learn more or to talk with like-minded baseball fans, join the Dead Ball Discussion Group on Facebook.